How's everybody?
Good.
Let's have a word of prayer. We'll do some housekeeping. We'll talk about Leviticus for probably the last time. And then we'll go and do something. How's that sound? Good. So the Lord be with you. Let us pray. Blessed Lord, who has caused all scriptures to be written for our instruction. Teach us so to hear them, to read, mark, learn, and inwardly digest them, so that we may embrace and ever hold fast the blessed hope of everlasting life that you have given to us through our Lord Jesus Christ, to whom with you and the Holy Spirit be all honor and glory, world without end. Amen.
Amen.
Beautiful. How many people have been here for the past two, or either of the past two Sundays? Cool, awesome, okay, cool. So, we've been dealing with Leviticus. No, actually, I love this book. We've been dealing with Leviticus, so and again, we actually have some stuff to read this morning, and hopefully, if you've been here for the past one or two Sundays, hopefully when we get around to reading what it is that we're going to be reading, it doesn't sound stupid. It doesn't sound ridiculous. It might sound irrelevant on a certain level, I'll just be honest with you, but at least hopefully after the past 2 weeks, it makes sense in a certain way. You can see why it says what it's saying, instead of just saying, it doesn't apply to me, so who cares. So just to review quickly, Leviticus, almost everybody that reads the Bible sees that initial chapter of the Bible, that is the creation, as a wonderful thing. God creates throughout 6 days. At the end of the sixth day, God sees everything that he's created, and it's very good. It's beautiful. There's sky, earth, sea, and everything that's in those three things. It's just beautiful. Everything fits. Everything has a place. Every place has a thing. Everything's balanced. Everything's named. It's, for me at least, that first chapter of Genesis is like an extended poem. It's just a beautiful picture of the way in which it's a beautiful picture of the world. The picture that Leviticus sees of the world is exactly that. That is exactly the picture that Leviticus sees. And that is that everything is balanced, everything is whole, everything fits, every place has a thing, everything has a place. Things fit together, and practically 99.999% of the things in this world are good. Leviticus is going to have certain technical terms. Again, you know what technical terms are. They're like words that sort of in people know, right? So when good Episcopalians, when we talk about, Eucharist, we don't have to explain what the Eucharist is every time we use the word Eucharist, right? We need to say the word Eucharist, and everybody in this room sort of knows what we're talking about. When I say the word Paschal candle, you can sort of know what that is. I don't need to explain it every time. Leviticus is going to have certain technical terms that it's not going to explain every time. In fact, it never explains it. But if you take a look at the book of Leviticus as a whole, you sort of get what it's talking about. Whenever something conforms to the purpose for which it was made, in other words, if something is whole and good and it does what it's supposed to do, Leviticus is going to call that clean. It's something that's two thumbs up. Whether it's a chair, whether it's a wall, whether it's a stand, whether it's coffee, chairs, whether it's a watch, whether it's a whiteboard. If something does what it's supposed to do, it's called clean, according to Leviticus. And I always like to put clean in quotation marks, because that's not our technical term. That's not what we would say. We would say it's not broken, right? Or it's whole, or something like this. Leviticus is going to call it clean, whatever it is. It can be a person, a place, or a thing. There are certain things that are clean that are set aside for the worship of God. And that can be persons, places, or things. And that's what we call holy. And again, the nice thing about teaching in an Episcopal church is that we already understand this. We understand that certain places are holier than other places. It doesn't mean that there's like some magic about them. It doesn't mean that if you step up inside that altar rail, right, something, exactly, right? No. It's not that there's something magic about it. It's that it's a holy place. That is, simply, it's been set aside for the worship of God. In a similar way, and again, we might think about, and again, this is a trivial example, a trivial analogy, but once a year, basically in this, at least this society, once a year, everyone has a special cake. And it's a special cake because it looks different, because it's a cake with candles on it, right? And you light the candles, and you blow those candles out. What in the hell is that about? Right? You can imagine someone from another culture coming in. It's like, what does that have to do with any? Why is it because someone got born, which applies to all of us, that you have a... It's simply because it's simply what this culture does when someone has a birthday, right? There's a special cake, and because it's special, you treat it specially, and you do special things with it. You don't just eat it. So far, so good? Same thing with holy things, and that is, it doesn't mean they're really nice. It doesn't mean they're really delicious. Certainly not. I was the Eucharistic minister this morning, and we had to consume all of the host. Doesn't mean it's necessarily really delicious, but it's holy. It's set aside for the worship of God. That's holy. You live in the same world that I do, and everything does not conform to the purpose for which it's made. Some things get broken, some things get worn out, some things, even holy things sometimes, get broken or worn out, or they just don't work the way that they're supposed to. And the example that I love to use in this room is exactly that. And that is the ceiling, or the roof, is not doing the job that it needs to be doing. And there's a sign of that. And we can take a look at that sign, and we can know that something else is going on. Leviticus is going to call things that don't conform to the purpose for which they're made unclean. Unclean, yet again. Oh my gosh, I don't know. I feel like I have to say this 10,000 times because of the way in which it's been used in the church. Unclean, according to Leviticus. Now, I can tell you the Pharisees, when we get over to the New Testament, somewhere around 2075, whenever we get over to the New Testament, the Pharisees are going to see unclean as a very different type of thing. But in the book of Leviticus itself, in the original scriptures, unclean does not mean evil, it does not mean sinful, it does not mean wicked, it does not mean despicable, it does not mean abhorrent, it does not mean perverted, it does not mean any of those things. Unclean simply means it doesn't conform to the purpose for which it was made. There's something askew with it. It's a chair with a broken leg, or a leg that's a little bit wobbly, right? It's a stand that there's not this little... It's a stand that there's not this little thing, so when you put something on it, it just slides right off. Well, it doesn't really do what it's supposed to do, right? You're supposed to be able to put something here and it just stay on. So it doesn't do what it's supposed to do. This is a technical term. It's just what it's going to call it. Among things that don't conform to the purpose for which it was made, there's two types. There are things that just, from time immemorial, they're just unclean. There's something about them, and again, we'll see an example this morning. They're just unclean. They just don't conform to the pattern. There are, however, certain things, and with one exception, human beings always, always, always are temporarily unclean when they're unclean. That is, they get sick. They get sick, either body, mind, or spirit, right? There's something, it just doesn't, they're not what we would call healthy, right? So they become temporarily unclean. The one exception to a human being that's temporarily unclean is death, a corpse, right? Because I can tell you, with one exception that Leviticus had no idea about, right? Once you get there, it's pretty permanent, right? You're not going to get better, right? So temporarily unclean for human beings most of the time, other types of things can be temporarily unclean, that is not conformed to the purpose for which they're made, but they can actually get to a state where they do conform. things that are holy. Oh, just one more thing, and that is these lines, particularly here. And this is going to be important in just a second, which we haven't talked about yet. These lines right here and right here are actually permeable. It doesn't mean that you can use, it doesn't mean that they don't exist. It doesn't mean, this is really important. It doesn't mean that holy and clean things are the same thing. Oh my God. A good Anglo-Catholic and a writer of the book of Leviticus would just have a conniption fit if you said, oh, holy and clean things are the same thing. No, they're not the same thing at all. I had to eat all those hosts this morning. We couldn't just throw them in the trash, right? It's not all the same thing. They're actually, but we move here. So we can pass that boundary. Things that are holy, that simply become clean, we would say, oh, I don't know, desacralized, unconsecrated. This is a word that Leviticus is going to use as profane. And this can happen, and again, this is something we'll talk about. This movement can happen both in a healthy, and again, using our language, this movement can happen in a healthy way, and this movement can happen in an unhealthy way. If this movement happens in an unhealthy way, lots of times it tends toward death. Death, either physical or death as far as spiritual, or something happens, right? If you start treating holy things as if they're just common things, in other words, if you profane them, that's a bad thing. The word profane in Hebrew is not necessarily a negative connotation. But it is, Leviticus is really concerned about holy things, keeping holy things holy, unless you intentionally want to not make them holy anymore. In other words, and my example here is in the book of occasional services in the Episcopal Church. If there is a church that we no longer want to be a church anymore, we want to turn it into a theater, or we want to turn it into an apartment building, or we want to turn it into something, there's actually a service that you can go through. And you thank God for the place, and you thank God for the ministry that has happened there, blah, 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 blah. And you make certain movements, and you say certain words, and suddenly it's no longer a holy place anymore. That's awesome. Leviticus would still call that profaning the thing. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. It happens all the time. So holy things become clean. In Leviticus, is going to use the word, English translation, the word profane. Clean things become temporarily unclean. And again, it's, for me at least, I think it's mostly because of the way in which English translators generally see, particularly English Christian translators generally see the book of Leviticus. These things have negative connotations, which just gives you a bad taste in your mouth when you read the book. So you think that it's all about profaning and polluting things. It actually isn't. The things that profane or the things that pollute are actually a tiny, tiny little, tiny few minor, well, what would that be? 0.001, right? But again, it is what they sort of pay attention to pollute things. We would say to wear out. We would say to get sick. We would say to become infirm. We would say a lot of different types of things for that movement. This movement down occurs in one of three ways. According to Leviticus, it occurs in one of three ways. It occurs because of infirmity. And again, infirmity meaning just like we would say infirmity. That is a sickness. The word entropy was used last week. I love that. That was really good. Again, chairs can get sick as well, right? According to Leviticus, right? Chairs or stands or walls. Okay, that still works. Well, not all. You see, they can get sick too. Look at that over there. You see that? They can get sick as well. So infirmity, right? It can also be caused by sin. And again, I feel like I had to say it 10,000 times in Leviticus. This isn't going to be true in Exodus. It's not going to be true. Yeah, it's not going to be true in Deuteronomy when we meet back in the fall. But in Leviticus, the word sin doesn't have a moral connotation to it. For Leviticus, I mean, you do understand that they're like different books in the Bible. I mean, you understand that, right? It's not just one big book written by God. There are different books, just like the Norton Anthology of English Literature, right? I can tell you that the author of Beowulf and the author of, oh, I don't know, Tennyson, right? They saw the world quite differently. And you can see that, actually, in the works in this anthology, right? So the book of Leviticus is going to see things. I can tell you the book of Leviticus is going to see things remarkably different than the book of Deuteronomy when we meet back in the fall. It's going to be very different. For Leviticus, the word sin has no moral connotation to it. all a sin is some action that you do, either intentionally or even unintentionally. It doesn't really matter whether it's intentional or unintentional. It's some action that occurs that causes this slide. It causes this slide down. There's a story, I saw this play actually last year, about a group of women who were working in, I can't remember where it was, somewhere in the early 20th century. There was a clock, a watchmaker, that they were they would take radium paint, right? And they would paint the numbers on the little tiny watch face. It was incredibly detailed work. There was this group of women that did that, right? But what they would do consistently is that as they were doing this, they would lick and make the right, and do that. Leviticus would say that's unclean. Leviticus would call that a sin because it's an action. I can tell you that actually eventually did lead to their deaths, right? Because they got radiation poisoning. And you say, yeah, but they didn't mean to do it. They didn't understand. They didn't. Leviticus would say, yeah, they're still dead. Right? It doesn't really matter. It's an action, intentional or unintentional, that causes this. And so it's so important is that the word sin here doesn't have a moral connotation to it. It's simply an action that causes this slide, intentional or unintentional. And so, for me at least, and again, something that I'll address hopefully by the end of this, is that how ironic that there are so many people that read the book of Leviticus, making it a hyper-moralistic treatise, a hyper-moralistic book, when in fact, that's not what it's trying to do at all. It really isn't. And I don't really have a dog in the fight. I'm not trying to like pull the wool over your eyes. It really doesn't. So sin, infirmity, and also crossing. Crossing has to do with taking something that's good and clean and holy, or not necessarily holy, but good and clean, it does what it's supposed to do, and using it for another purpose. And the example that I use here is that suppose we want to redo Roper Hall, and so we want to like save money. Trust me, I'm on a vestry, right? So we want to save money. So what we're going to do is that we're going to, obviously this roof is no good, so what we're going to do is that we're going to take that wall and take a big crane and just use that wall as the new roof. If the vestry tries to do that, vote them all out, right? Because what that is, according to Leviticus, taking something that's fine and good, it's clean, it's a clean wall, but it's not intended to be a roof, right? That's what crossing is. Taking something that belongs in one category and transferring it, intentionally or unintentionally, to another category. Because I can tell you that if you take a wall and you make it into a ceiling, you make it into a roof, you will tend toward death. Because that's not what it's for. All right. So, crossing. Cool. This is the natural flow of things. Things can also, these lines can also be gone up. Things that are temporarily unclean that become clean. They can be cleansed. And things that are clean, this is a big word among Methodists. Sanctified. Not so big about Episcopalians, but sanctified or consecrated. We like consecrated usually in the Episcopal Church. Sacred, sanctify this water, we pray you, by the power of your Holy Spirit. Right? That's pretty good, huh? Nice tone, huh? So, to make something holy, something that's clean, make it holy. The thing is that this slide is pretty natural, and eventually, I can tell you, eventually, everything's going to wind up here. Spoiler alert, everybody here is eventually going to wind up down here. This flow is kind of natural. This flow cannot be done by yourself. You cannot do this by yourself. In fact, you can become sick and not conform to the purpose for which you're made because of some infirmity. And you can actually become well, but that doesn't count. You're not clean until the community recognizes. So you remember the lepers? Remember the lepers in the Gospel of Mark? The 10 lepers. And they say, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on us. He says, go show yourself to the priest. And the reason why you would show yourself to the priest is to become clean, right? To be have that healing instantiated. Well, that's the reason why you have to go show yourself to the priest, because wholeness, the way I like to think about it in the book of Leviticus, is that wholeness, health, is a communal thing. It's not an individual thing. It's something that we do together. It's something that it's relational. So, same thing with holy. Things that are temporally unclean, clean, that process that's done in community is done with water. Things that are clean that become holy, that is usually done with blood. Through certain rituals. Rituals with water, rituals with blood. Cool. Ooh! I'm getting faster and faster at this, aren't I? Cool. This took us a whole 40 minutes last night. Now it took us 15, or ish, 20. Cool. Two things we talked about last week, and that is this way of understanding the world. Again, Leviticus is not about telling you what you have to do. It's trying to tell you the way things are. This way of understanding the world, I can tell you, is... I can tell, again, I'll just be blunt with you. I sincerely doubt there's not a single person in this room this morning that does not see the world this way. Especially good Episcopalians. We understand, again, the thing that you have to do with Methodists and Baptists is sort of explain the holy thing, right? But we understand holy, and if you got holy, you got the whole thing. I suspect that we all see the world this way on some level. For the book of Leviticus, there are two things that sort of symbolize this way of understanding the world. The tabernacle, the place where they worship. And I guarantee you that we ourselves, here at the Church of the Transfiguration, the place that we worship, that sanctuary right over there, is set up in this exact way. Where you sort of have a entry spot, you know where the water is. Oh, the water? Oh, how interesting that there's water at the door of the church. So you come in, right? There's water. There's sort of that entryway with that water stuff, and you come into the nave, and then there's the chancel up at the front. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? Every time you walk into the church, whether you realize it or not, this way of understanding the world is being impressed upon you over and over and over. The second thing that the book of Leviticus is going to say is the perfect symbol, a wonderful symbol for understanding this, is Roy Heller. No, not Roy Heller, but a human body. And that is, with the human body, the thing with the human body is boundaries. And that is the skin. Leviticus is going to be hyper about skin. Because it is, in fact, Roy Heller's skin that defines what is Roy Heller to what is not Roy Heller. And for Leviticus, that's a perfect, it's a wonderful metaphor for understanding things that come in, things that go out. Leviticus is going to be hyper about things that, just like with the boundaries, Leviticus is going to be hyper about things that go in, and it's going to be hyper about things that come out. Because I can tell you, if things go in that shouldn't go in, you're going to tend toward death. There's nothing wrong with cyanide. There really isn't. It's a perfectly good chemical compound. It's not bad. In fact, cyanide itself is clean. But you don't want to eat it. Because if you eat it, it's not bad in and of itself. But if you use it for food, you're going to tend toward death. Right? When I say that cyanide is X, Y, and Z chemical compound, I'm not telling you anything to do. Right? I'm just telling you the way things are. And once you understand the way things are, you know what to do. Don't eat it. Right? That's the reason for the little crossbones in the skull. Right? On it. So, it's just telling you it's fine and dandy in and of itself. But you don't want it to go in. Same thing with things going out. There's something that's inside the human body that Leviticus is going to be hyper about. And it's blood. You're going to be hyper about blood. Because I can tell you, with a human body, it's really, really, really important that the blood stays inside. Because if the blood comes outside, almost, with one exception, almost in any sort, well, no, even with that one exception, if there's blood inside that comes outside, that's something you need to pay attention to. Because if that continues, eventually you're going to be empty. And that's not a good thing. That'll tend toward death. So... And of course, the one we're all adults here. The one exception is menstruation, right? That's the reason why, again, Leviticus is going to be hyper about it. Not because they think women are evil or wicked or all that. No. Because they think they're valuable. They're wonderful. And so we need to keep an eye on that to make sure it doesn't break those boundaries of time. And it just keeps going because it's not clean. It's not whole. It's not healthy. So. Ooh! Lordy mercy. In 12 minutes, let's take a look at some texts. What I have on the back is an outline of the book of Leviticus, and this is my own outline. You can go anywhere you want to, and you're not going to. This is what you pay your pledge card for. It's right here. This is my own. Because, and again, the way I have Leviticus arranged or divided up is what I call gap. And in fact, when I was printing it all this morning, I thought gap isn't a really good word, because a gap means, right? A gap means there isn't anything, right? There's something here and there's something here, but there's nothing in the middle. That's what, for me, at least in my head, right? Mind the gap, right? When you're on the subway or something like this, right? Mind the gap. And it's not really the word gap. It's the, what I'm talking about are these things. Boundaries. And Leviticus is going to be arranged or organized according to talking about these types of boundaries and about how to cross them healthily, what we would say healthily, or how not to cross, or how what happens when you don't cross them healthily. Boundaries are really important. Oh, my glasses are in my cassock and I don't want to get it right now. So there you go. The very first thing we talk about in the book of Leviticus are sacrifices. And there's seven different types of sacrifice. And the only thing we hear about with the book of Leviticus is a sin offering. When you do something that tends toward death, there's actually a way of remedying it. You're not just sort of stuck. The whole point is that if you start sliding down, there's a way of remedying it to get it back up, to get back into a state of cleanness, or even perhaps even holiness. So there's ways of doing it. But there's all sorts of other types of offerings. There it is. I have to put it way up here. Cereal offering, peace offering, purification offering, or reparation offering. And what these other four have to do with is our common life together. If I do something against you, right, there's a way of dealing with that. If I do something against God, that's the sin offering. But if I do something against you, but also there are other types of offerings. What happens if, what happens if my, and again, from my own point of view, what happens if my wife gives birth to a bouncing baby child, girl or boy, perfectly healthy, all 10 toes, and I'm just overwhelmed with joy? That's awesome. One of the ways that you can show that is through a peace offering, what's called a peace offering here. And there's a certain way that you do that. With everything except a burnt offering, the neat thing about the cereal, peace, purification, or reparation, I'm not so sure about the purification, I think about it, but with the cereal, the peace, and the reparation, is that you participate in it. You eat it. It's like a barbecue, or it's like toast, or something like this, depending on if you use grain or meat or something. But again, you actually participate in it. It's not just something that you give and you never see again, actually. It's very participatory. Then there's ridgers of the boundary. That is what priests do. Priests are the ones that make sure that those things aren't hard and fast, but they're permeable in the right ways. And then various types of uncleanness and their treatment. That is, if things are unclean, you don't just leave them. We try to think about how to get them back into cleanness. And then the second half of the book has to do with holiness. Cool. Let's take a look at a couple of texts. Things that are sort of endemic, I guess, of Leviticus. Things that whenever people think about Leviticus, things that they always think of. But hopefully now, it kind of makes sense. And again, particularly in the idea that whatever Leviticus is trying to do is trying to tell you the way things are. It's not necessarily trying to tell you what you need to do. So they're not laws that way. Kind of like laws of nature instead of moral laws. Cool. So here we go. Chapter 11, he talks about unclean animals. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying to them, speak to the people of Israel, saying, and the first is the land animals thing is what I put in there, because that's the first paragraph. He's going to talk about land animals, he's going to talk about water animals, he's going to talk about air animals. Which is kind of cool, because if you remember back to the first chapter of Genesis, that's the three things that God sort of creates. Things up there, things in here, and things in the water. So it's kind of lines up really nicely. Land animals, here we go. From among all the land animals, these are the creatures that you may eat.
There it is, right there. Again, I've heard people say, oh, but it's so stupid because you can't play football, right? Because it's a pig skin, right? You can touch pigs. You can kiss pigs. You can wash pigs. You can own pigs. You can sell pigs. You can do whatever you want to with pigs. You can make money off of pigs. You can put little bonnets on them and make them cute and everything. But don't eat them. That's the one thing you can't. So again, you notice that the thing with land animals, with all of these unclean animals, has nothing to do with the animal in and of itself. It has to do, it's something that's outside that must not come inside for some reason. And here's the reason. From among the land animals, these are the creatures you may eat. Any animal that has divided hoofs and is cleft-footed and chews the cud. All right? So animals that have hooves that are, you know, have two little things, so far so good. Not like a horse, right? Two little things, like a cow or so, or a goat, reindeer, those types of things. And that have multiple, regurgitate their food. That's what you do. With those types of animals, you can eat. But among those that chew the cud or have divided hooves, you can't eat the following, right? Camel, and the reason why? Because it doesn't have hooves, right? The camel, for even though it chews the cud, it doesn't have divided hooves. It's unclean. And what does it mean to be unclean? It doesn't mean that it's wicked. It doesn't mean that it's evil. No, it's just it's something outside that can't go inside. And why are these things that are outside, why can't they go inside? Because they don't conform to what land animals should be. Well, who says what a land animal should be? Leviticus. Leviticus says what a land, and they're quite explicit about what a land animal should be. Is this what we think a land animal should be? No. I wouldn't recommend eating a horse or a dog, but depends on how hungry you are. But again, it's not our presuppositions about what land animals are. Leviticus isn't trying, and you just notice this is really important. Leviticus is not trying to convince you that this is what a land animal should be. It's just telling you this is what we believe land animals should be. Once you understand that presupposition, then you can do the formula. Right? It's like playing, again, I don't want to trivialize it, but it's like playing a game. Obviously, I could do it because it's possible because I just did it. Right? But it's not part of the game. You have to understand the rules, and then you can play the game. Here's the rule. What a land animal is, divided hooves, ruminant, chews the cud, you can eat that. So, if that's true, let's see. Rabbits? Can you eat rabbits? No, of course not. Can you eat dogs? No, of course not. Can you eat badgers? No, of course not. See, it's really easy. Goats? Can you eat goats? Yes. Can you eat cows? Yes. Can you eat horses? No. Again, once you sort of know the rules, it just sort of follows. It's not arguing what a land animal is. It's telling you what a land animal is. And then once you understand that, then you can play the game. Does that make sense? We can argue about the presupposition, but I can tell, because of course we have no presuppositions about food. We have all sorts of presuppositions about food. Every culture has presuppositions about food. The thing is that we don't make ours explicit. We just assume it's normal. We just assume it's natural. We just assume that it's the way things are. But I can tell you we all have presuppositions about food. Same thing about water animals. These you may eat, all that are in the waters, everything in the waters that has fins and scales, whether in the seas or the streams. That's what you can eat. Anything in the seas or the streams that does not have fins and scales are the swimming creatures in the water or among all the other living creatures that are in the waters. They're detestable to you. You don't eat them. Right? So again, once you know that, catfish, no, they don't have scales, according to Leviticus. They don't have scales. You can't eat catfish, but you can't eat perch. You can't eat mullet, but you can't eat shrimp. It's because of the, right? And again, it's not arguing that this is what a land animal is. It's just telling you this is what we think a land animal is, and therefore you know what it, you know how to play the game. Same thing with air animals. And air animals is divided into two parts. There's birds, and then there's what Leviticus is going to call swarmers. And so as far as, notice the thing with birds. These you should regard as detestable among the birds. Notice it doesn't define what the quality of a bird is. In this particular case, it sort of changes the rules on us here a little bit. What it's going to do is that it's going to expect you to be able to come up with the rules. I love that. I love the way in which Leviticus is trying to train you here. It's actually like a manual. It's actually like a textbook. And that is, it's giving you two examples of giving you the rules and then showing you the way in which those apply. Here's the things, is that here's what birds are. Ready? These you regard as detestable among the birds. They shall not be eaten. They are an abomination. Right? They cross boundaries in illegal ways or in ways that aren't healthy. Ready? Eagle, vulture, osprey, buzzard, kite. Ravens, well, let's leave aside ostrich because we have certain presuppositions about ostriches that they wouldn't have. Seagulls, hawks. What's the thing that ties all of those things together? Huh? Predatory, that's right. They deal all the time. The way in which they're all carnivores in a sense. The way in which they eat is always eating meat, or usually eating meat. That is, you always see them around corpses, right? And therefore, because they're always around corpses, these particular birds are always around corpses. Corpses, as we've talked about before, you got to be careful of that, right? That's a boundary, living, dead. And these birds cross that all the time. In fact, that's how they survive, is by crossing that boundary between living and dead things. Chickens? Yeah, awesome. Well, of course chickens. Chicken noodle soup. Right? Sure. Vulture noodle soup? Oh, no. You don't want to do that. Right? So again, they cross it. Same thing with swarmers. All winged insects that walk upon all fours are detestable for you. Insects have six legs. I know that. You know that. Every 8th grade student knows that. Leviticus doesn't know that. I don't know why. They probably had more things with bugs than we do. They probably were in contact. But anyway, they just say that they have four legs. All winged insects that walk upon four fours are detestable to you. Among the winged insects that walk upon all fours, you can eat those that have jointed legs above the feet with which to leap on the ground. So crickets. You can eat crickets if you want to. Locusts. You can eat locusts. Grasshoppers. You can eat those. But things that actually, like pill bugs, you don't want to do that. So anyway, roaches, no roaches. But things that pop, you can do that. And again, they give you the rule, and then you can play the game. And at the very end of this, I am the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. He brings it back around to the idea of holiness. Presuppositions, playing the game. I'm not going to read it, but the next page has to do with Leviticus 19. Leviticus 19 appears right in the middle of Leviticus. And Leviticus 19, in fact, Leviticus 19 is whenever somebody came and asked Jesus, what's the greatest law? Leviticus 19 is going to be that second half. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. We like to pluck it out of its context and just sort of make it about love. In fact, that verse appears in a context with boundaries and crossing of those boundaries are really important. So how is it that we, because you would think, imagine with Leviticus, you've got someone over here, you're over here, what's that boundary? So I can imagine Leviticus might say something like, well, let's just be very clear that you take care of yourself and other people take care of themselves. I can imagine that. But in fact, Leviticus is going to turn that on its head. In fact, there is no boundary. There is no boundary between you and the neighbor. That boundary does not exist, which I can imagine to everyone else that Leviticus was being written to is going to be assumed. There's a great boundary between us and them. Leviticus is going to completely undercut that. The book that obsesses about boundaries more than any other. There's going to be other boundaries here that are really important, but when it comes to generosity, when it comes to giving, when it comes to love, there is no boundary. Anyway, cool. Questions, concerns? 2 minutes or 1 minute, 30 seconds early, 15 seconds early. You're wasting your time. Yeah.
Say what?
That's right, exactly.
19, right at the bottom. Yeah, isn't that cool? I love that at the very bottom. You shall not hate in your heart any one of your kin, right? There is no boundary there. You shall reprove your neighbor, or you will incur guilt yourself. Don't take vengeance or bear a grudge against any of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. You shall keep my statutes. Don't let your animals breed with a different kind. Don't sow your field with two kinds of seed. Don't put on a garment made of two different materials. I love that because there's 18, and then there's 19. And the way in which normal people sort of would read this, it's like, well, one's really important, one's stupid. Oh, it all fits together. It's all in a piece. Leviticus is like a beautiful meal. It's like a beautiful quilt, right? Where all the pieces fit together. And unless you understand how the pieces fit together, or at least you have an appreciation that the pieces actually do fit together, it just becomes random stuff. But no, everything fits together. It's like, if you know anything about Plato's Republic, it's this beautiful picture, the way in which society should and can work, but all the pieces fit together. So, anyway. Cool. What I want to do next week is that throughout this week, or perhaps what you've been doing over the past 2 weeks, because I've run long, because Leviticus is so wonderful, if you have questions, concerns, comments, prayer requests, or particularly donations that you want to bring, I will accept those. And we'll talk next week. Sound good? For our final, last, next week is our final one for this year until it's fall. Sound good?